We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our creator, not our government. I believe that scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the morning.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, April 23rd, and true conservatives around the country are still very frustrated with Congress for passing the $95 billion foreign aid spending package over the weekend, with $60 billion going to Ukraine, funding both sides of the Middle East conflict, and also funds going to Taiwan, while not securing our own border. Representative Chip Roy out of the great state of Texas tweeted this yesterday: "The American people are overwhelmingly with us on the issues, border security, spending, and weaponization of government, etc. We must shed the fearful conventional wisdom in Washington and lead boldly with freedom and American security at the forefront." So Chip Roy joins me now. Good morning, sir. And I wish that more conservatives in Washington agreed with this sentiment and were willing to be bold. What is going on that it seems like there is just a uniparty and the speaker is doing everything that the Democrats want?
Yeah, Jenna, great to be on. I just want to be very clear to start off with your listeners in particular, and you, and I know you know this because you just led with it. Look, I voted for Israel funding in November. I strongly support Israel. I offered to the speaker and had whipped in favor and worked hours upon hours to get unity among the Freedom Caucus and conservatives who strongly believe we should pay for every nickel of this stuff before we send any foreign aid. The Israel was unique. After the attacks on October 7th, we were willing to put the bill on the floor, have a vote, and move it across, even though it would be unpaid for. But they wouldn't do that. And so Israel became a part of this package on purpose to move the entire foreign aid package, along with Ukraine, to send it over, despite there being no border security, despite the fact that the Israel funding included $9 billion humanitarian aid, as you noted, a good chunk of which can go to Hamas. Despite the fact that Ukraine, that we do not have a clear mission, and all of this is coming before the American people are getting, the safety and security they deserve at home. I had to vote no. I unapologetically voted no. I would vote no again. And the image of having members of Congress waving the Ukrainian flag on the floor of the House when the American people are suffering, and when we have people dying from fentanyl poisoning pouring across our border, and when we have people like Lake and Riley getting killed, and when we have 24,000 Chinese foreign nationals who have come across our country that we know of that were apprehended since October 1 alone, it is unconscionable that Republicans supported this and have the audacity to be a part in criticizing those of us who didn't. And that's the state of play right now among Republicans. And we're going to keep our foot on the gas for the American people.
And Speaker Johnson responded on Newsmax to why there was no border security in the bill. And I want your response to this clip. This is cut one.
Why is the border not in this package? Because, Greta, we didn't have the votes to do it. I have a handful of my Republicans, at least, who will not advance a rule to bring that to the floor to combine it with the Ukraine and Israel funding. They won't do it. And so if I don't have Republican votes, that means we have to have Democrat votes. Yeah.
And so your colleague Thomas Massey posted that clip with this comment. He said, "This is purposefully misleading. He, the speaker, never tried to combine a bill to secure the U.S. border to a bill that funds the wars in Ukraine and Israel." Do you agree with that assessment?
All right. So there's two pieces of this. I want to be very clear because honor matters. And I want to be very straightforward as it relates to speaker here. Number one, there's a specific question. We had a vote last week where they separated the bills and had a separate vote on H.R. 2, on the border bill that we already passed, right? We already sent it over to the Senate. They changed it. They took out E-Verify because now some of our members wanted to water it down because of E-Verify. And then they added some language to pay some of the states back. So I told the speaker, I said, look, I don't love this. I don't like it strategically. I think we're going to give cover to Democrats. And I'm certainly not going to vote for this rule to put this across that'll basically be a part of this sham package, because Republicans wanted a cover vote. They wanted to confuse the American people that we were somehow going to include border. Let me be very clear. It was a separate rule designed for cover. It would not have been combined or attached to Ukraine. It was happening at the same time, but was separate, designed to fail. Thomas and I and Ralph Norman opposed that in committee, in the Rules Committee. Separately, if the speaker is saying generally that he was saying, well, I can't get the votes for that, there'll be people that will oppose putting them together. The Freedom Caucus was generally standing ready to figure out how to move Ukraine funding with strong border security. The question was what it would look like. How could we get it done? So we were working with the speaker and saying, we will work round the clock. Stay here through recess. Let's figure out what we need to do. But the speaker would never put it on the floor, saying simply, well, I don't think we can do that. Here's the bottom line. The speaker really wants the Ukraine funding, and he thought that this, at the end of the day, was the best way to get the Ukraine funding and Israel funding done. And he was worried about making the Democrats mad by forcing a Republican-only version across the floor. I will concede that it was a fight because there's a lot of Republicans who just didn't want to spend any money on this stuff without paying for it and were concerned about giving another dollar to Ukraine. But people like me were saying, I will work with the conference to move a Republican-only bill if we can have Israel plus Ukraine plus real border security, something like H.R. 2, send that over to the Senate. I believe that if the speaker puts that on the floor, we get the votes for it. More importantly, put it on the floor and find out. And then if some people vote no, then you can say, well, let me come up with some other path. But the last point is this. The speaker spent 6 months saying, I will not move Ukraine without border security. You either mean it or you don't. He clearly didn't.
I'm speaking with Congressman Chip Roy out of Texas, and that's what's mind-boggling to me, is that Speaker Johnson has spent 6 months, as you just said, saying that we won't secure anyone else's borders before our own. This has to be a package. And then without testing that theory, and of course, you can do the whip count, all of those things, sure, but he didn't even bring it up for a vote so that he could at least say that he tried. So what is really going on with Mike Johnson? I mean, we've heard Pastor Jack Hibbs, who's a very dear friend, posted a video last week, even ahead of the vote, suggesting that there may be, you know, some other things going on in D.C. and to pray for Speaker Johnson and, you know, not to give up hope. But, you know, wasn't really clear as far as what his conversations in Washington were. So we're kind of getting some different views from, I think, a lot of people who know Mike Johnson and who, like me, really wanted him to do well. And yet, we're just seeing that the evidence and the proof of his leadership in fulfilling his promises just isn't there.
Well, let me just start with this. I, too, wanted him to do well. And I, of course, still wish him and his family, you know, well and pray for him. And he's under enormous pressure. Look, Republicans are up against a wall. Chuck Schumer, the Biden administration are insane. And with all due respect, we also get a lot of pressure coming out of the former President Trump, on things like this loan idea, repo idea, which, by the way, we included in this bill, but doesn't do anything. At the end of the day, it was like basically a loan provision for $8 billion of the $60 billion going to Ukraine, with a 50% of it the president can just unilaterally forgive, and Congress can forgive the rest. I mean, it's kind of a joke. And that became a part of the mess, and there's been reporting on that. So, look, I'm going to call balls and strikes. I don't believe this bill is something Republicans should support. It should be noted, a majority of Republicans voted against the Ukraine provision. 55 Republicans voted against the rule. That is unprecedented to even move this bill to the floor. Even the conference chairwoman, Elise Stefanik, voted against the Ukraine provision in the bill this weekend. And that's what we're up against. And with all due respect to the speaker, look, leadership matters. You've got to be willing to go stare down the other side and say, Mr. Schumer, you're not going to get a dollar of Ukraine funding. You're not $1 out of Republican support here. unless you secure the border of the United States. And if you won't do that, we will see you in November. And then people would say, well, but Chip, then Ukraine would fall. One, I don't believe that the Democrats would have then walked away. I think they would have showed up at the table if they knew we meant it. You've got to negotiate like Governor DeSantis does in Florida, right? You got to mean it, and then people will respond.
Yeah, and a lot of people are suggesting that maybe Speaker Johnson just simply wasn't prepared to do that. And I mean, I remember you and I having these conversations in the midst of the battle for who would become Speaker after McCarthy was ousted. And with all due respect to Kevin McCarthy, it seemed like he would have at least done perhaps a better job of some of this negotiation just because of his prior experience. So do you attribute this with Mike Johnson to simply being overwhelmed, simply being unprepared for the challenges of Speaker, or have his priorities genuinely changed? Because in another interview I saw on C-SPAN, he was telling a reporter that after this classified briefing, he sees that on the FISA issue, for example, he sees that reauthorization is necessary, which fundamentally goes against everything that he's been saying for the last 7 years in the House Judiciary Committee.
Yeah, so this is one of those things that happens in D.C. And, you know, I had been getting updates from the various people involved about what the status was in Ukraine, for example. Obviously, FISA, we sat in the, you know, it's called the SCIF, like where you do intel briefings, right? We sat down there with, you know, former intel leaders from the Republican administration and others listening to all this stuff literally like weeks before. I'd heard the same stuff Mike had heard. Then there was questions being raised of me and others saying, well, have you gone into the SCIF about Ukraine? And technically, I had not. I'd gotten the briefings that were not, you know, in the SCIF. So I went before I voted. I went down to the SCIF. I got all the briefings, talked to a general, talked to people that were involved directly, you know, overseas. And it was literally what I knew it was. They used that as cover because there's no way to really peel it back. Think about it. Like, I'm prohibited by law from even talking about what I talk about behind that wall, right? And they're able to say, oh, if you just had access to these intelligence briefings, you would understand how critical this is to our interests, and particularly, you just know the real facts on the ground with respect to Ukraine or what would happen if there's a warrant, heaven forbid, a warrant requirement to look at America's information gathered by intelligence agencies. And it's hard to fight back, right? Because you're going to have the Wall Street Journal editorializing and saying Chip Roy is an isolationist who does not believe in protecting American strength. What is wrong with these knuckleheads? They take down rules and they're breaking the house. You're up against that kind of a message. But here's the good news. There is an increasing number of us, a large block of us, who are done. We're not going to play the Washington swamp games anymore. We're going to call them out. And if that makes us unpopular sitting around the table in the bowels of the Capitol, then so be it. But the American people need to know the truth. And so we're trying to do that. We're trying to expose it. I'm willing to take all the arrows. I've got some of my pro-Israel groups who are mad at me and saying you're walking away from Israel, you know, and I take that's personal. You know, I mean, I biblically believe in standing with Israel, but not blindly, not stupidly. Not in a way where we're funding Hamas and funding Israel at the same time. So I'm going to speak out and say what I believe is the truth and let the cards fall.
And that's commendable, and that's actually standing for principle. And so to be clear, in the last minute that I have with you, nothing that you saw in the classified briefings versus what the rest of us who don't have access to that know in the public domain changed your opinion on FISA, on Ukraine, on any of this, that such that you think that the Speaker can legitimately use that as an excuse?
I do not believe so. I do not. I still believe the warrant requirement would be helpful in making sure Americans are protected with respect to FISA, and I believe they could continue to operate and carry out the intelligence they need to without being limited if we had that protection in place. With respect to Ukraine, I can't say what I talked about behind closed doors, but I can just tell you, yes, it is public knowledge. Ukraine has bled through a whole lot of money. They're running out of, you know, stuff that they need. They're running out of bodies, all the things that we all know publicly. And I do want to find a way to try to help them stand on the wall against Putin, but not at the expense of our own national security, not without a clear mission, and not without making sure that money is no longer being wasted and that we're paying for it, because we are $34.5 trillion in debt. The dollar's getting weaker. Our economy's getting messed up, and we need to stand up for the people.
Amen to that. And thank you for standing firm on principle, even though it is a small minority at this point of conservatives in Washington that are doing that. It's those of you like you, Thomas Massie, Bob Good, and others in the Freedom Caucus that really give us hope that we have representation in Washington. So thank you, Representative Chip Roy, as always, for stopping by. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show, and that's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That's why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies. And that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or $140, helps to rescue 5 babies' lives. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just dial #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And in the midst of this aid package that is funding both sides of the Middle East conflict, as we've been describing, how is that going to practically affect Israel? So Joel Rosenberg, who is the editor-in-chief of All Israel News, joins me now. So Joel, first of all, what is the state of things right now in Israel? I know you're in Jerusalem. And what are your thoughts on the aid package that money's coming to Israel, but also going to Hamas as well, unfortunately?
Well, let's break things down one at a time. Thank you. It's great to be with you, Jenna. And so the situation here, I would say, if you look at it in the military sense, the geopolitical sense, we're on high alert, and there's a very real concern that we're going to be in a much larger, much, much larger, possibly even apocalyptic missile war with Iran and with Iran's proxies, Hezbollah specifically, in Lebanon, which has 150,000 missiles pointed at Israel. The situation in the north between Israel and Lebanon and Hezbollah is very, very bad. It's getting worse. 35 missile attacks just last night, which was the first night of Passover. So here we are as Israelis and Jews worldwide remembering and celebrating God's mercy to us when the tyrants of Egypt enslaved us for 430 years. And how God rescued us and let our people go. And now we're praying, Lord, protect us from the Iranian regime. And Lord, force the Pharaoh of Hamas to let our people go, 133 hostages out of Gaza. So I would say things are on edge here and very, very high alert. And yet that's true, but it's also true underneath it that Israelis are feeling a little more peaceful. You know, we hit back at Iran, even though Biden told us not to, but we didn't do so in a way that seems like it's going to immediately erupt into a much larger war. But that bigger war is coming, make no mistake. So, okay, so that's the first answer. The second answer on the aid package, look, I give a lot of credit to Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, who really put his political career on the line to do the right thing. The right thing being to break the different foreign aid funding bills into different bills so people could vote on them up or down on their own. We see that so rarely in Washington, right, where usually it's some huge omnibus package, and if you vote for the things that you want, you're also voting for things you hate. And I think Johnson did the right thing by saying, look, vote up or down on Israel aid, on Ukraine aid, on Taiwan aid, and that's, you know, and then we'll roll it all together and send it to the Senate. And I actually have to say that he did the right thing, and it got through. So I'm encouraged by that. Now, in terms of the money that is being spent on humanitarian relief. Is that what you're saying? I didn't hear your previous segment. Some of that humanitarian aid might go to Hamas. Is that what you're saying?
And yeah, that's what Representatives Bob Good and Chip Roy and others in Washington are saying, that that particular package that is earmarked for so-called humanitarian aid is really going to Hamas. And and obviously they're rightly, I think, upset about that. And so so really it now comes down to the U.S. is funding both sides of the Middle East conflict.
I don't think that's accurate. I mean, and look, Israel's not going to do that. So, you know, they can give us aid and we don't have to spend it, right? American taxpayers would be happy if we didn't spend some of the money that you guys send us. But
Not like we're going to get a refund, probably.
But I'm just saying that the Israeli government is not going to purposefully give money to Hamas. And we're in
But they're two separate packages, right?
Battle.
So I think that's where they're coming from. That this, you know, because this is humanitarian aid that's going directly to places like Palestine. So it's not necessarily that the Israeli government has control over the funds that are going toward humanitarian aid.
Well, I haven't seen the language of exactly how that's structured. I will be honest with that, because I think in the fall, right, almost immediately, Johnson, when he first became Speaker, got through a $14.5 billion emergency military aid package, so we can buy more ammunition that we're burning through at very fast rates, right? Buy more missile interceptors, which we're burning through at high rates also. That's the key component of the $26 billion, and then there was the $9 billion. So there's a little bit of some extra bells and whistles that I'm not sure exactly how that's accounted. The point being, look, providing humanitarian relief for desperate Palestinians in Gaza is not the wrong thing to do. Making sure that money doesn't go to Hamas, but is in fact done in a way that that is careful, that's super important. That's America's job. Then, if those funds are not actually routing through Israel, but are through routing through some other way, through that specific set of provisions, then it's incumbent on Congress and the administration to not let that money fall into the hands of Hamas. And Washington better take that pretty seriously.
Well, you have a lot more faith in Congress than I do in terms of routing this appropriately and not actually funding both sides of the war. And, you know, from the language that that the members of Congress, is particularly the Freedom Caucus, I mean, I would trust their reading of it. And the stories that have come out, particularly talking about funding both sides of the war, over some faith in Congress actually doing the right thing in the White House, not allowing it to go to Palestine and Hamas.
Well, but Congress, it's really incumbent on the Biden administration to do the right thing, and I don't have faith in that. But my point is, the bill was basically being hijacked. Either, like, 6 months later, right, after Israel went to war because we were invaded, and 6 months after the House passed a straight $14.5 billion just for military aid for Israel, and Biden wouldn't get it done, and the Senate under Schumer larded it up with all kinds of other things, then the question is, almost 7 months in, don't you have to get that military aid to your best ally one way or the other? And I think the answer is yes. So I think the challenge now is to put pressure on the Biden administration in how they execute the delivery of this money. But I don't think it's fair, and I say that with respect for our friends in the Freedom Caucus, but I don't think it's fair to characterize voting on the Israel funding bill as suddenly funding both sides. The question is, how is the money delivered? And that's a big question. But
right, and to be clear, I think there's a
military funding.
Sure, I think there is a distinction here because of the individual proposals. There is a distinction between those who voted to support Israel funding, like Chip Roy in the last segment said that, you know, he stands with Israel, he supports aid to Israel, all of that, but not the humanitarian aid. And I think that because those were two different proposals, that those are two distinct things. And so I don't want to mischaracterize both of those as being together and suggesting that somehow the money that is going specifically to Israel is also going to fund Hamas. I mean, so we're talking about the $17 billion for Israel and $9 billion as a different proposal for humanitarian aid. Now, that's gotten wrapped up and is going to go as one package, including Taiwan and Ukraine, into the Senate. And so the Senate won't have the same opportunity that the House did. But Joel Rosenberg, I want to ask you, you know, you have a different perspective on Speaker Johnson than a lot of conservatives do, and I respect your opinion and your view on this, and particularly because, you know, you are both an Israeli and also an American citizen. Do you find it, from an American perspective, troubling that the Speaker would bring all of these aid packages, including Israel, which I support, but would bring all of that without a separate proposal as well to fund the United States border? Because that's what he's getting a lot of criticism for.
And he deserves criticism for that. Like, I've never met Speaker Johnson, but I like him. I like his basic direction. I know he's got a difficult, a very thin needle to thread, but he's absolutely got to make an immediate and major commitment to get past funding to finish building the wall and doing all the other things that are necessary to protect our southern border. And he's opening himself up, needlessly, in my view, to the charges that you care more about other people's borders in other countries, even our allies, okay, admittedly, but more than our own. And that's, I don't think that's true about him, but he's opening himself to an easy charge that it can be easily knocked down. Now, the question of, you know, I would use the word sequencing, trying to get this legislation, these other pieces, Israel, Taiwan, Ukraine, for me, in that order, was the right thing to do, but he absolutely should have publicly said at the same time, and within 1 week or whatever it would be, we're bringing this new bill to the floor that does X, Y, and Z to protect the southern border. And he should move fast on that. He didn't do it. He still should. And it's a self-inflicted error if he does not.
Yeah, I would agree with that. At minimum, it was an error in timing, and I would have liked to see that contemporaneously with all of these other packages, so it's not like the United States border is an afterthought, which, even if he brings that to the floor now, that seems like what it will be. But in the last about 5 minutes ahead.
Oh, sorry, Jenna, can I just make one comment on that?
Yeah, absolutely.
The reason I think he should have said that he was bringing it next and had a very specific bill to do it, but not put it together on the Saturday night vote, was because the Senate may or may not go with the border bill, but we absolutely still have to get these other things done. The problem is that both sides are playing chicken with each other. Well, I'm not passing your legislation unless you put the things in it that I want. And after 6 months, our major allies that are facing existential threats were really in terrible danger. We had to get that money moving. So there, I still believe there is room to applaud bipartisanship. Not always. Sometimes you just have to stand and say, no, heck no, I'm not passing what the Democrats want. But in this case, in three separate areas, with three separate allies, starting with Israel, there actually was bipartisan consensus to move. So good. Johnson did it. He got it done. But he should be saying, and the next thing down the line is, you know, basically, I double dare the Democrats to vote against, funding to actually protect our border. And that's a good policy position, and it's a good political position. But if it was used to then cause the Senate not to even get this thing done for Israel and the others, then I think that would have been a mistake. So he's got a very difficult situation. He's now got three House members who are poised to pull the trigger on him politically and bring down his speakership. And for what purpose? How are we going to do better than Speaker Johnson? We should be unifying and putting out bills that define where one party wants to go to do the right things and hopefully bring some Democrats aboard, even if you can't bring everybody aboard.
And I do agree with that, Joel Rosenberg, that especially heading into November and the ramping up of the election cycle that is going to start within the next couple of months, especially after the conventions, it's not going to be a wise use of time for a motion to vacate and then having this weeks or months long debate over yet another speaker. I mean, we barely got consensus through on Mike Johnson. Who else are they going to pick? I think we may end up with a speaker, Hakeem Jeffries. And there's a lot of chatter on social media that I disagree with that is like, well, what's the difference between Hakeem Jeffries and Mike Johnson? Well, actually a lot. Actually quite a lot.
Huge difference. Yeah, exactly. So, look, there's no point in there's a lot of problems in the Republican Party, and I can't solve them from Jerusalem. We got enough problems over here that we are trying to focus on. But, look, you know, a party that's trying to do the right thing and move the country, turn the country around and get it going back in the right direction has got to be careful. A, you can't get everything done every time, but you've got to show the American people that you can get some things done that are really important and good, and then that you pass, and Johnson absolutely has to pass, major legislation in the House that defines what true border security means for America and the dangers of putting a party in power that is absolutely opposed. And I think he will, I think Johnson actually would pick up some Democrats and put a lot of pressure on the Senate to be against it. I think the Senate will still be against it because of the Democrats there. But that's then you have a defining issue. Choose one side or the other come fall. But Johnson has a chance to define with Trump. I think he should work very closely with President Trump in passing the exact package that President Trump would want on security for the border, because that's what you'll get the maximum support in the country. Because I think President Trump is absolutely right on his border policies, and let's go legislate that. Or, I mean, not me. I'm, you know. But anyway, Johnson should.
Well, as a voter, our representative,
and he worked closely. Yeah, Johnson worked closely with President Trump on getting this this foreign aid package done, even though the former president had some issues, but they resolved them and they figured out a way to make some of the stuff for Ukraine loans. And not actual direct aid. Good. That's what the speaker and the former president working together to get stuff done. That's a good model. That's the first one, not the first time, but it's one of the few times I've seen it really work well to break a logjam. They should do that again on border security.
Yeah, I think that they missed a huge opportunity, and the speaker did, in the wake of the Senate simply voting down the trial of Alejandro Mayorkas and holding him accountable and the Biden administration accountable through evidence and at least having the trial in the Senate over the lack of a border enforcement policy and going against the legal requirements there. And of course, the other impeachment article was lying in front of Congress, something different than border security. But they missed an opportunity there, Joel Rosenberg, to immediately follow up that Senate vote by saying, OK, then we're going to pass legislation. So if you're not going to hold these people accountable, then at least we will legislate further that and have stronger laws that have to be enforced. And if they don't follow that, then we're going to impeach them again. I mean, it just seems like the slim majority of the House has become an excuse to not even put things up for a vote and not even try.
That's right. And what I would love to see is I'd love to come over and sit with Speaker Johnson to discuss this, although I don't want to wait for another month and a half till I get back to the States. He needs to use the Israel vote, and especially when it's passed in a few, few days, whatever, and signed by the president. He needs to then use that to say, we need border security just like even more than Israel does, because look what happened when Israel didn't protect its southern border on October 7th. There was a massacre. We cannot let this happen. It's now time to learn that lesson afresh. And here's the 8-point plan or whatever it is. And here's the amount of money we're going to put into it. And here's how we're going to pay for it. That is leadership. And I think Speaker Johnson is up for it. I know he's got a lot on his plate. But, okay, one set of things has been moved off now. Now he's got to focus on this, because this is going to be one of the driving force issues. And I think there could be more bipartisan support for it, even though you won't see it from Biden. You'll veto, even if it did pass the Senate, right, on true border security. But that would be
absolutely
a defining moment. Yeah,
absolutely. Joel Rosenberg, we're already out of time. I had so many more questions for you, but we'll just have to have you back as always. And I love your commentary, and it's a different perspective than, you know, the members of the Freedom Caucus, which I think is a valid perspective to say, you know, this, we weren't going to pass all of this together. And so at least get done the Israel aid first and then hopefully follow up with border security package. I take a different view, but I think that's a legitimate interpretation of maybe what Mike Johnson is strategizing here. So Joel Rosenberg, always really appreciate it. And we will continue to pray for the safety of everyone in Israel. And we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And interesting to hear from Joel Rosenberg, a different perspective on Speaker Johnson and the moving of the aid packages. And I think, as I said to him, I think that's a valid perspective to say, well, we need to, you know, we being the United States, we need to pass at least Israel aid. And if we can't pass a comprehensive border security bill simultaneously, then at least get the priorities done and then hopefully follow that up with an aid package. The reason I agree with Representatives Bob Good and Chip Roy and others who have been disappointed in Speaker Johnson, one is because he promised those priorities first and said, we're not going to fund anyone else until we make sure that we secure our own border. So that's something that he didn't, in my view, have a good enough reason to say why he's backed off of that now. But second, politics is all about leverage, and Washington is so transactional. I learned that, unfortunately, during my time there. And he's lost now any sort of leverage that he might have, because he's given the Democrats everything they want in terms of the aid package to Ukraine. And so rather than saying, I mean, this is one of the times that you use an omnibus. Democrats do this all the time. They will say, well, you're not going to get what you want unless you also get what we want. And so we'll fund or we'll put all of these things into one package and pass it together so that everybody gets some of what they want, or even all of what they want. And that's how negotiations work. And so if it's an isolated border security bill, then sure, we may see who doesn't vote for it, and that can be a campaign issue for 2024. But I'm more concerned as an American citizen about actually securing the border, not just having some great ads and talking points for Republicans heading into November. So it seems that he's lost his leverage, and if he thinks that, or even, you know, Joel, who I really respect his opinion, and I'm glad he brought a different perspective to this show, and I like, you know, having those different perspectives to see what people think, and, you know, obviously people that I respect. But if now Mike Johnson thinks that potentially he'll have any sort of leverage, I mean, look at what the Senate did with Mayorkas. They weren't even willing to even entertain a trial to hold accountable someone who's already in the Biden administration not following the law. And so if anybody thinks that the Democrats will be remotely interested in securing the border after they've already gotten what they wanted, well, then, you know, then at best, it's naivete over how Washington works, unfortunately. But let's turn to a different issue that is going to be on the ballot in various ways in November, and certainly has become a hot button talking point and a hot button issue heading into November because of Dobbs and the fallout, and how Arizona is now enforcing their older law that if the Arizona legislature does not do anything, which in my view they shouldn't, then almost all abortions will be banned in Arizona, which is a good thing. That is definitely actually progress in pro-life. And so, of course, the topic is abortion. So joining me now is Emily Davis, who is with the SBA Pro-Life America. And Emily, the question now becomes when so many Republicans are wanting to back off of abortion because they think this isn't a winning issue, how are organizations, pro-life organizations, like yours and others going to meaningfully push forward the issue of pro-life from now and through November and beyond?
Hey, Jenna, thank you so much for having me on. Yeah, I mean, one of the main things that we have to keep doing is looking at the facts of the and the after, you know, the audit of what happened in each election. And one of the things we keep reminding Republicans is you can't run or disengage from this issue. The ostrich strategy on this is not going to work. A, because it's incredibly important to list your support for serving moms and saving babies. That is incredibly important. But it's also incredibly important to be clear. What we saw happen in the midterms are all of the pro-life governors, the people that were closest to the people in their states, they got reelected. And the ones who did not, you know, be clear on their stance, their pro-life stance, a lot of them did not get reelected. I mean, if they ask you about abortion in the news and all you do is talk about another topic or you deflect and block and bridge, that's not going to cut it. You should be telling people, look, I'm pro-life, but I understand democratically what we do as a people, and then just say, here's where I can work within you know, the government. And that's great. That's what you should do. You should be what we call the three C's: be clear, be compassionate, and really drive a contrast from the other side. Because I guarantee whatever opponent they're going up against, they are not listing a single limit that they're going to put on abortion. And that is imperative that you help people understand how radical they are now. I mean, we have really just seen a radicalization in the last 5 years. And this is a human rights issue, too. This is something that's really important that SBA, we talk about a lot. This is not just a states' rights issue, but a human rights issue. Federalism is so important. States are so important. But this isn't public libraries or potholes to mend. This is human life.
Yeah, so well said. And it is, to me, very frustrating to see some Republicans backing off of this because they don't want to be called extremists and they don't want to be labeled as against women's rights and all of these things, rather than saying, well, wait a minute, let's force the Democrats to reveal their hand and show how their position is actually the one that is very extreme. And I was watching that clip from Jake Tapper. I don't know if you saw that on CNN, where he was interviewing someone, and I forget precisely the context, but he was challenging the Republican and saying, you know, well, late term abortions just never happen. I mean, you never see that anybody is going for abortion all the way up until birth. And I'm thinking, my former home state of Colorado, that's literally what the law is. And there was no pushback. And so it's like the left is in their own echo chamber and they're wanting their own extreme policies while pretending that they are actually more for a moderate position.
You can't leave these types of challenges unanswered, particularly when you have the facts and the moral high ground on your side. I mean, we call it political negligence. You have got to go in there and fight back. The facts and the moral high ground are on your side. And if you don't, look, Democrats already have their federal game. They've already made abortion pretty much the most central issue of their campaign. And they have promised and pledged that they're going to do whatever they can to either nuke the filibuster, pack the court, whatever it is to, quote unquote, restore Roe. Now, we know that they're not actually going to even restore Roe. They're going to go much further because they already have that federal legislation that they pushed out in the, quote unquote, so-called Women's Health Protection Act. And that's going to strip all pro-life states, state laws. And that is an incredibly scary. Republicans should be fighting this as much as possible.
Yeah, I'm speaking with Emily Davis of SBA Pro-Life America. And when we look at some of the initiatives, ballot initiatives that we haven't seen prevail since Dobbs, particularly, you know, Ohio and other places. Do you think that moving forward, it's going to be helpful to get better language that is more clear on some of these state and ballot initiatives? Or is the problem really that a lot of people are buying into the leftist narrative and even so-called conservatives are saying, well, wait a minute, maybe we're not as pro-life as we thought we were?
I think it's both, actually. I mean, one of the major problems is, and you know this, Jenna, in politics, the one with the most tens of millions tends to advance, you know, their initiative. And there is no doubt that the other side has way more money that they're pumping into this. We see the ACLU and Planned Parenthood just pumping millions and millions of dollars to these outside groups coming into these states and putting that money in there with this fear-mongering language. I mean, look at the initiative in Ohio. It told women that if you don't vote for this, you're not going to get miscarriage care. I mean, that's egregious. They had to have the Ohio AG come out and say, women of this state, you can absolutely get care from miscarriages. That has nothing to do with this abortion ballot. So, yeah, the language on these ballot initiatives is incredibly deceptive. We saw Governor DeSantis, you know, you have the Florida one coming up, call out a reporter the other day because the reporter was trying to say, oh, no, no, you can, parents will still know about their children if they get an abortion in Florida. And Governor DeSantis said, you need to read it. That's not what it says at all. It strips parental consent. And it just says notification. They can potentially notify the parent after the fact. So the parent doesn't have to know. I mean, these are some awful things that have to be combated and fought.
And this requires people to do their due diligence. And one of the things that I admire and respect about Governor DeSantis is he actually reads all of this, and he's very well prepared and comes with an arsenal of facts. And that's exactly what pro-lifers need to do as well. And we need to not be caught off guard when whether it, you know, we're talking to reporters or not, you know, in our personal lives, if we're just advocating for this, even to friends or family members who may use the leftist talking points to come back and be able to say, you know, no, this isn't the case. And here's why I'm pro-life. Here's why this is the truthful position and so forth. And be prepared as well to encourage the right use of the vote and to continue to advocate for all of these issues. And so where do you think the biggest battleground is going to be in terms of, you know, not necessarily on a state, but I mean more philosophically, heading into November when we're seeing some people, particularly like Carrie Lake out of Arizona, when you have this great win, now she's backing off of it as the GOP candidate for the Senate. Where are the lines of the battlegrounds primarily going to be?
Well, I think it's really important to not disparage different pro-life laws that are set in different states. And also keep in mind, a lot of these laws carry with them millions of dollars of support for pregnancy resource centers and to serve mothers as well. So, you know, putting down other states' pro-life laws, that's not helpful at all, and it doesn't advance the pro-life cause. So that's incredibly important. Number two, we have got to, what you just said, it's really important for us to educate ourselves, because I'm going to tell you, reading, you know, a New York Times or a Politico or any of these, you are not going to get an accurate summation of what that ballot initiative says. Even, unfortunately, some of the local media we see, I mean, they just shill for the pro-abortion side. They literally take their talking points, and we can see it directly in the report. It's just shameful. So really make sure to educate yourself. You know, go to different organizations, SBA Pro-Life. We try to put out all of the facts on these different ballots so you can see what the truth of the matter is. And just keep yourself educated and carry on these conversations and make sure to vote.
Absolutely. So well said, Emily Davis. Really appreciate your time this morning. And this is also why American Family Association has AFA Action. And you can also go to iVoter Guide and look at us at these proposals. Obviously, pro-life is one of the key issues. And you need to be informed. I mean, I can't tell you how many times there are elections that almost every election that happens, or, you know, other ballot initiatives and everything. And literally like the day or two before the election is when I get the most questions from people saying, well, how should I vote on this? Or how do I read this or this proposition? The language doesn't really make sense. And it's like they're literally on their way to vote. I mean, you know, these are friends sometimes, or even, you know, just people who will message me or email me and ask. And I'm thinking, you know, don't wait until the moment of voting. If we are concerned citizens and we understand stewardship of the inheritance of the blessings of liberty that we still have in this country, even though they're getting winnowed away, then we need to do our due diligence. We need to be prepared, know what is on your particular ballot where you live, and ask the questions up front so that you know how you should vote, but also you can help others who may not have done their due diligence. And so this is going to be very important heading into November, and especially because, you know, this continues to be every election is the next more important one, so that we can conserve our country. We can conserve liberty and we can also advance conservative principles. So you can always reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net. We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.